The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The problem we have, the biggest problem we have in the whole world, it's not global warming, it's nuclear warming. And all it takes is one madman, and you're going to have a problem the likes of which the world has never seen. And it's only a matter of seconds. You don't have to wait 200 to 300 years for it to happen.
So what you're saying is demonstrably true. Why is this not something our leaders talk about or the press talks about?
Because I don't think they're smart. I don't think they get it. Putin got it. I would talk to him about it all the time.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Now, those are words to think about, huh? Former president there with Tucker Carlson. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. It is good to be back here with you today. Boy, we got a full show. A lot is going on, especially in the culture war. And I think we'll dive into that today. I want you to be up to speed on what's happening and really well-formed in your thought regarding how to process it, maybe even talk to loved ones about it. But before we get into some of the news with Bud Light and so many other things, let's pick up on where we are on the international scene. And you just heard the president there. I'm going to say it again and again and again. Don't get mad at me. All right. When I hear news clips like that, I keep going back. Pray, pray, pray. Maggie showed me a clip of Pope Francis during his Wednesday address calling for prayer. In fact, I'll talk to you about that coming up in a little bit, too. I think that's a really important point. We have to listen to the vicar of Christ on earth when he says certain things. And he talked about the world scene. And actually quoted two great popes in what he had to say about where we are right now, what the solution is. I'll share that coming up. But right now, that top secret document, that leak from the Pentagon, well, it has revealed information about the Ukraine war. And it's been hard to get casualty numbers. Like, what's the truth? I mean, is Ukraine losing? Or are they really holding off Russia? New York Times reported that one document says that Russians, they've suffered somewhere around 200,000 casualties, 189,000 to 223, so somewhere in that range, including 43,000 killed in action. That's a lot. Vietnam, the U.S. lost, I think, 59,000 soldiers in all. 43,000 people have already lost their life. Russians, 43,000 have been killed in action. American officials have previously estimated Russian losses to be about 200,000. That's a pretty big discrepancy, isn't it? American officials are more circumspect in describing Ukrainian losses. They've said that there have been about 100,000. And again, what's the true number? Well, we're seeing in the leak twice that, right? The U.S. saying, 100,000 have been. No, the real numbers are about 200,000, 223,000, somewhere in that range. So the leaked document says that as of February, Ukraine suffered 124,000 to 131,000 casualties. That's up to about 17,500 killed in action. And, you know, the numbers are disputed by observers, but the fact is that the Times was reporting that the Pentagon's own confidence in those numbers is low, meaning that they're just ballpark figures. So we'll see what happens. I mean, in the fog of war, there's always propaganda. There's always spin. Monday, South Korean defense officials reported that routine calls between the two Koreas have not taken place. North Korea has gone dark. They are ghosting the South. And when I saw this, I thought, wow, we got to think about this. What's going on here? The reason for the lack of response to, they have this standard, I don't know if you know this, twice daily calls between certain officials. Those were not immediately evident. And the military liaisons, their channels were also affected. The South Korean Defense Ministry said that there was no immediate explanation from North Korea, which appears to have broken off contact unilaterally. And observers believe that the break in communication could be a North Korean response to this joint military exercise being conducted by the U.S. and South Korea. And I'm sure that's probably really what it is. Here at home, you're going to be hearing a lot of this. I'm not going to dive too deeply into it yet because, boy, you're going to get a lot of politics, I'm sure, in the days ahead. But the Democrats have chosen the host city for nominating their convention next year. You know where it is? Chicago, the Windy City. That's right. Atlanta, New York were the other two cities in contention. But because Georgia is a right-to-work state, the labor unions argues that it would create tension between the unions and the white working class voters just 2 months before the election. And the last time it was in Chicago was back in 96 when the party nominated Bill Clinton and Al Gore for the highest office in the land. So Chicago, as you know, I don't know where you are tuned in right now, fraught with gun violence, right? A lot of people are leaving this particular city. I hope it's successful. You know, I think Chicago is a beautiful city. I think it's a great city. And I hate to see such liberal policies in the state of Illinois drive so much industry and enterprise and people out of the state. You know, taxes are high. I think it's a great state. And, you know, I'm glad the convention came here. It could, you know, it'll do them some good. But we'll see what ultimately shakes out. You know, Democrats are pretty clear they believe choosing Chicago is going to help them build a winner in 2024. There's always a strategy behind this. And the hope is that they're going to maintain support in what they call the Midwestern blue wall states. You know what they are? Which states are always blue, right? You know, they tend to always be blue. Illinois, right? Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin. They went red for Trump. But fundamentally, if you get the Midwest blue states, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, they figure they come here, it's going to be good for those key states when it comes to the election. There's a guy running for... he's opening an exploratory committee for president. I like this guy. I think he would be really good. I don't know how familiar you are with Senator Tim Scott. He's from South Carolina. Whether he becomes the nominee or becomes somebody's vice president, he's got such a great story, such a wonderful family story, coming up from nothing. Seems like a very moral man, just a great spirit on him. He's a black Republican senator, and he made his announcement in front of Fort Sumter in Charleston. It's the site of the very first battle of the Civil War. In fact, he announced it on the 162nd anniversary of that battle. He says this. He says, on this day, April 12th, 1861, in this harbor, the first shots of the Civil War were fired and our country faced a defining moment. Would we truly be one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all? America's soul, he said, was put to the test, and we prevailed. You know, will his campaign get any traction? That's the question. But I love what he raises. You know, the president, current president, Joe Biden, has talked extensively about this battle for the soul of America. You know, democracy is in jeopardy. And, you know, I would agree. I think the soul of America is in trouble right now. And I think we need good, well-formed, moral men and women in those types of positions. So we'll see who else throws their hats in the ring in the days ahead. I was a little disappointed by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. And you know, we talked yesterday. If you missed this, please go back and check it out. We had a great conversation with Brian Birch from Catholic Vote the other day about the FBI putting undercover agents, you know, beginning to infiltrate the Catholic Church. Why would they do that? You know, what was driving them? What was behind that? We broke all that down. We talked a little bit about it. And again, this is something that should concern you, whether you are Catholic or Jewish, whether you are, you know, conservative or liberal. I think it's terrible when you've got a federal agency being weaponized or beginning investigations into organizations like the Catholic Church. So Senator Majority Schumer said he would introduce a bill praising the Department of Justice. He's going to praise them. He's going to condemn calls to defund the DOJ and the FBI. Now, again, Catholic Vote was reporting that Schumer's resolution states that the Senate, and I want to share it with you, quote, recognizes and appreciates the dedication and devotion demonstrated by the men and women in federal law enforcement agencies who keep communities of the United States and the United States safe. He says partisan attempts by former President Jay Trump and his allies to degrade public trust in federal law enforcement agencies for attempted political or legal benefit. That's his words. That's Chuck Schumer's. So Senator Marco Rubio, Florida, you know, he saw what Schumer was trying to do, and he tweeted out. He says, I will attempt to amend. I'll attempt to amend it by adding language that condemns something that actually happened. DOJ and FBI trying to infiltrate Catholic parishes and cultivate sources inside Catholic churches. He says, let's hope that amendment makes it through. I was, like I said, disappointed in Schumer, not surprised, but disappointed in that, what he had to say. We'll see what unfolds. We will definitely see what unfolds. You know, Ed Marcy is going to be joining me. I don't know. It's been a while since I had an opportunity to talk with him. He sits behind the mic here quite often when I'm gone. And I thought of him the other day because we, at Relevant Radio, of course, we have an app. I hope you've downloaded it and used it. You might be buying a Tesla. You might be getting some sort of EV. There is new technology coming for your car. And as this new technology comes aboard, a lot of the old technology changes and certain things get eliminated, right? Well, bad news for AM radio. If you love AM radio and that's how you're listening to us, it's going to be diminished in the future. I mean, 8 tracks, right? Remember those things? They're a thing of the past. You know, you no longer... You know, you no longer have a lot of things that were in the car, but AM's been around from the beginning. You know, been around from the beginning. Part of the reason is the interference that they say these electric vehicles manifest. I don't know if that's true. If that's entirely true. You know, a number of car makers are now just taking them out of the cars altogether. Why not leave them in? You know, I'll fight through the static if I have to. Right? Well, why take that band off? They keep FM receivers, but they're getting rid of AM. Now, again, AM is an older technology. It operates very differently than FM. I won't get into how that all operates, but the FCC requires most AM stations to turn their signals down at night. Some stations have to power down. But it's also great for national catastrophes or national problems, a very powerful mechanism reaching the country. But there's something beyond that. Conservative talk show host Mark Levin, He made the case that, you know, there might be something more to this. You know, most people listen to the radios in their cars, and maybe it's not just the battery. Maybe it is an attempt to target conservatives in general. I don't know. I'll throw it out there. Ed Marcy has a view, no doubt about it. Longtime friend of the show here. He is managing editor at hotair.com. I don't know if you've checked that out. If not, go and bookmark that. He hosts a twice-weekly internet talk program, the Ed Marcy Show, and he fills in for Hugh Hewitt quite often. It's great to have him here with us today. Ed, welcome back.
Thanks, Drew. Great to be back.
I'm delighted to have you here. Yeah, what do you make of this? You know, I know that AM radio is going. I think the Ford Mustangs are going to be doing away with it. BMW is no longer going to include AM radios in their car. You know, you've got talkers like Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, Hugh Hewitt, others that have very big followings over those type of frequencies. What do you make of Levin's comments? Do you think there's any merit to that?
I actually do. I mean, there's not a whole lot of really good reason to eliminate AM. If as long as you're still supplying car radios, and especially if you're still supplying an FM car radio, there's not a lot of reason to drop the AM radio out of that. Now, I understand that there's technical issues in terms of antenna length, and most antennas now are internal anyway. But there's not a lot of reason to exclude it off of that. And I think that Levin's probably correct. And I think that a lot of talk radio companies are concerned about that. It's certainly been something. I mean, I can say, you know, I work for Salem Radio, and Salem Radio has been concerned about it. Now, that's not a secret. They're openly concerned about it, and they're talking about it. This is, I think, an attempt to try to squeeze out talk radio. And it's not just politics. Right. I mean, you know, I talk about politics and I guest host over here. And one of the wonderful things about guest hosting, you know, for you, Drew, is that I get a chance to have a change of pace, right? I don't have to talk about politics all the time, but right. we do some politics talk. But, you know, Salem is really it's a Christian radio network at its core. That's what it does. That's its main, thrust. Relevant Radio is a Catholic radio network, and primarily, although not exclusively, on AM stations. Right. And what that does is there's other sort of sports talk. There's entertainment talk. There's all sorts of different talk radio. And really, I mean, this is it just seems like a completely unsubstantiated way to shut down a lot of discussion, a lot of talk, a lot of debate and entertainment, really, for people who are in cars and driving. And it's it's been very successful for decades, and it is very, very popular. And there's really no reason to get rid of it other than just sort of, well, there's really no reason to get rid of it. Right. So I think Levin has a point.
I agree.
I mean, I don't understand any other reason why these car manufacturers would all of a sudden all get together and decide, well, we're not going to do AM radio anymore. That makes no sense at all to me. For any other reason, there's no other reason that makes sense to me.
So what are they saying? Are they arguing the interference, you know, case? Or how are they justifying it? What are they saying? Hey, we're not going to do it.
They're saying that it interferes with the operation of the cars because electric vehicles have more advanced technology and that AM radio reception somehow interferes with that. Now, I don't know how receiving an AM radio signal would interfere with that. You know, I'm not a radio engineer. I'm not a commercial radio engineer, but I was a ham radio operator for quite a few years. And so I know a little bit something about, you know, reception versus transmission, and I'm not exactly sure how AM radio reception would impact the operation of a car. Yeah. I think that there's some, there might be some concern that the car operation could interfere with the reception in the radio and, you know, somehow cause some sort of, you know, dissatisfaction with how the components are operating. But A, that's pretty easily fixed. You can shield it. Secondly, that's not a reason to get rid of it. It's just a reason to tweak it to make sure it works properly.
Yeah, because that was my view. I thought, okay, because it's battery-driven, it's electric, we're going to have some sort of interference. And rather than work on shielding or trying to resolve the issue, they were just going to do away with it. I thought that was the argument. I didn't know that it could interfere with the operation of the vehicle. But,
well, I don't think it can. I mean, I think it's a lame argument, but that is one of the arguments, apparently, that's being...
That's so bizarre. That really is. So, but, you know, to Levin's point, I do think that, you know, most of conservative talk tends to be on the AM frequencies. Religion is on the AM frequencies as well. There's some liberal and some progressive talk there, too. It's not exclusively, but it's dominated by that particular voice out there. What's the alternative? What do you see as the future? I'm sure, what's Salem doing? I know Relevant is looking. I mean, and what's the timeline on this? It could be a decade. Do we move more towards apps? You know, I know that the computer, the screen time in the car, that's going to be important. You know, where you're positioned, if your station is there, or do you go with FM translators? I mean, how do you stay relevant?
Well, I mean, it's a great question, right? You know, FM translators are an expensive option. Not every outlet is going to have that option. You know, that it's another way that it's sort of, you know, a rent-seeking behavior. And I don't want to get into the, I don't want to necessarily go down that road too much because Relevant Radio isn't pursuing that as the solution, I'm sure, and neither is Salem. I mean, I think what we want is a good, honest debate as to what's really going on here and whether or not this is, you know, a proper thing to do. And, you know, being the conservative that I am, hoping that market forces will come to bear on this and force auto manufacturers to give people what they want. There are an awful lot of people out there who listen to Relevant Radio, Salem Radio, sports radio, progressive radio, whatever progressive radio is out there, entertainment radio. There's all sorts of great different discussions going on in the AM radio band. And I'm hoping that just by bringing this up and enlightening people as to what's going on with these manufacturers, that it will start a larger conversation and demonstrate the demand that there is for this. But I mean, and I think that that's really the best solution. If we can do that, I think that's the best solution.
Yeah. There was a senator. I don't know which one it was. Maybe you do. Is it Senator Markey? He's actually a Democrat out of Massachusetts.
It was Senator Markey. Yes. He's actually very good on this. He's actually very opposed to this idea. Right. And I mean, I'm not a guy who agrees with Ed Markey.
Right.
Pretty much ever.
I do on this.
He's actually good on this. He is actually very good on this. Yes.
Yeah, well, thank God for him. There's a voice out there because he sees the importance of having it. You know, it is a national service as well, but there's a lot of cars, Ed, in the future that are going to be saying goodbye to AM radio. You know, you've got Ford and Tesla and Volkswagen and Volvo and BMW, and I'm sure that list is going to continue to expand. So we'll see what happens. I'm hoping the app becomes viable. I hope AM continues to stay here. You know, they've said this a long time, though, haven't they? AM came around, FM, when that happened, you know, I guess they thought AM would die, and television came around, they thought radio was going to die, and the internet came around. It seems to continue to exist. I think people like it. There's something about it.
There's something immediate about radio. There's something very immediate, and I think there's something a lot more intimate about radio than there is, oddly enough, with television. Even though you're seeing images with television, I think that radio is a more intimate format. I think it's much more immediate. I was actually going to plug the Relevant Radio app here, too, by the way. You can connect your Relevant Radio app to most stereos in your cars now. So, you know, if you run into that issue, or even if you're in an area where you don't have a signal from a Relevant Radio broadcaster or affiliate, you can use your app, and then you can just run it through your car stereo. So, I mean, there are those options, and we'll see more of that, I'm sure, unfold with other broadcasters. But Relevant Radio app, folks, that's what you need to make sure you got your Relevant Radio app installed.
Amen to that. Father Rocky, every time I see him, that's all he ever says is, hey, you know, download your app. Did you have your app? Here's these prayers. There's a lot on the Relevant Radio app, too. You can get
tons of
prayers,
stuff.
You can get streaming, you get articles. It's a great, great resource for you. You can tap into our podcast. Hey, and on another note, just I want to talk a little bit about Chicago. The Democratic convention is going to end up there for 2024. What do you make of that decision? Good idea?
Bad idea. Really bad idea. And, you know, I'm not necessarily sure that there's a great urban core in which to have a platform for that, but there's certainly more less problematic urban cores than Chicago. It's not the worst choice. I think Minneapolis would have been a much worse choice, for instance.
No, yeah.
I'm actually a little surprised that they weren't thinking about that. I guess it was between Atlanta and Chicago. I mean, if it was me, if I was their political advisor, I would have said definitely Atlanta. Georgia's a battleground state. And there's no real evidence that there's a huge effect in terms of general election inflection from locating a convention in a state. But it's one of those things where, you know, it really can't hurt. But I think Chicago now is, you know, it's got so many problems that I think that it's really going to highlight what's been going on in Chicago, especially over the last, you know, couple of decades under single party management. I don't think that that's necessarily going to reflect terribly well on Democrats. I was a little surprised by that choice. I really thought that if it was down to Chicago and Atlanta, that they would have gone with Atlanta.
Yeah, well, they also were thinking about New York. That was the other one that was in the mix. It was New York and Atlanta and Chicago. But I thought, you know, maybe the logic behind it is that, you know, you want that blue wall. You want Michigan and Minnesota, and you want Chicago and Wisconsin. You put it there and you strengthen the base for that election. Some of those are swing states that could be, you know, they could be in play. Who knows? Who knows?
You know, I could see that. I could see choosing Milwaukee, although they just did it in Milwaukee, I think, not long ago, for that reason. Or Philadelphia would have probably been a pretty good option for that reason as well.
Yep.
Detroit may have been a good option, although Detroit's obviously been struggling for a long time, too.
Sure.
And it's been very hard on them out there. But I mean, maybe that would have been nice to get that kind of a boost from the Democratic Party. But, you know, Illinois is a solidly Democratic state, much more solidly Democratic than really Pennsylvania is, or Michigan is, or Wisconsin is. I mean, if you're talking about blue wall, and I think you're really smart in thinking that way, Drew. That's the last option I would have placed.
Yeah, I'm with you. Plus, look at the crime in the state. You know, gun violence is high.
Yeah.
You know, the organizations like Walmart are leaving. They're closing up stores there. I mean, a lot of people are exiting out of there. On another note, because we have a few moments here, I'm curious, too. I mean, Tim Scott, I like. I think he's a good and moral man. He's throwing his hat in the ring. I don't know whether he'll be a VP candidate at some point or whether America will rally around him. I was looking at some numbers recently. A lot of polls show that even as, you know, Trump continues to rise in the GOP primary polls, he's still kind of unpopular with the broader voting public. So how do you see Trump against Biden, if Biden runs, which he probably is going to? And what do you see about some of the other candidates who may throw their hats in there? You got DeSantis, you got Scott, et cetera.
Well, I mean, we saw Trump v. Biden 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, and it didn't work out well.
No.
I don't think Trump's position has appreciably changed for the better in those two plus years.
I'm with you.
And you've got Biden running as an incumbent, and there's a power in incumbency that is going to be difficult to overcome, especially when you're running the guy who lost against him the last time.
Right.
So, I mean, Trump, and that's just dispassionate looking from the outside in sort of thing. I like Tim Scott, too. I don't think that Republican nominees out of the Senate don't do terribly well. And I think there's a reason for that. I think Republicans are more naturally inclined to distributed power, so they look to the governors more because they're coming from outside in. And so the last couple of times that they've run a senator, there was John McCain in 2008. I think the prior time to that was Robert Dole in 1996. And there are other reasons why those two candidates didn't win, but they just didn't really gain any traction, even amongst their own party. And it, with McCain, he was really the last guy standing in that cycle, in a cycle where everybody knew that Republicans were not going to win another term in the White House, just based on everything else that was going on politically in that 2008 cycle. So that was sort of a thankless task for McCain anyway, but it's just not, Republicans aren't oriented to looking inside the beltway for their next nominee, whereas Democrats are a little bit more oriented to that, and for good reasons, for sort of natural reasons, they're more oriented towards centralizing authority and centralizing power and centralizing solutions in Washington, D.C., so it makes sense for them to look there, where Republicans are really about distributed power. So.
I got to run, but before I go, I'm just I'm curious if people want to follow you, get plugged into Hot Air. What's the best way to do that?
I'm on Twitter at Ed Morrissey, M-O-R-R-I-S-S-E-Y, and hotair.com. And I've got a number of different podcasts going on now. We've got a lot of VIP content that goes on for our members. Good. And but a lot of free stuff, too. So come on by.
Sounds great. Joe Biden going to run, yes or no?
Yes, he's running. All right. Yeah, he's
there running. There you go. Ed, thank you. We'll catch up again soon. I always appreciate your insights.
Thanks, Drew. Great being on again.
God bless you. That's Ed Morrissey. Say a prayer for him. It's bottom of the hour. Stay with me. Short pause when I come back. We've talked about this in the past. Looks like we're getting closer. The World Health Organization and America's sovereignty. Where do the two intersect? I'll fill you in.
Insight and analysis right here. It's the Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Get caught up on that conversation you missed by going to the Relevant Radio archives. Just select The Drew Mariani Show.
Yeah, I hope you'll join me day six of our novena. Our novena of chaplets to the Divine Mercy. Coming up in 30 minutes. Tell somebody else. All right. Have them join us. It's going to be great. Can't wait to do that with you. Continue to take a look at a story that has really given me pause. There's a tendency in our country to ignore what happens, you know, at the big international agencies like the UN. There's not a whole lot of reporting on it. A lot of people don't follow this stuff. I get it. The U.S., of course, is the biggest funder. Your taxpayers go to the U.N., right? Their policies don't tend to impact our everyday lives. We don't, you know, have, you know, blue-helmeted soldiers on the ground. We don't have blue-vested people, you know, running health clinics and digging wells like you see in other parts of the world. You don't have to change your laws in response to the demands from, you know, these unelected bureaucrats who sit in a building in, you know, New York somewhere and on the East River. That might change. And this is why I'm presenting it to you. I'm going to talk with Frank Gaffney about this in just a second. The World Health Organization, just to give you perspective on it, it's a branch of the UN that was started with the purpose of just trying to get better health care to countries that, well, that really need it. That, of course, is a good thing. But over the course of the years, their mission has expanded. And in the last couple of years, especially since COVID, that expansion has really become invasive. Excuse me. There are currently some proposals to basic World Health Organization charter documents that would, if they were enacted, threaten our sovereignty. They threaten U.S. sovereignty. There's a document called International Health Regulations, or IHR. It was started in 2005. And according to Dr. Sean Lin, Jackie Guan, writing in the Epoch Times, the World Health Organization is proposing revisions that would give the agency the authority to override health measures and these health decisions made by individual nations. And I'm thinking, what? Who gives them that authority? It would grant the organization the capability to censor what it considers misinformation and disinformation. We just went through this whole COVID pandemic, right? And we saw the censoring of data. I think if people had the ability to look at both sides, some people would have made decisions differently. You know, I hate to see that autonomy taken away from us. It can remove from the document a statement calling for the respect for dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of persons, and replace it with terms like equity and inclusivity. We live in a strange time. I'm telling you, we are living in a bizarre time. Never thought I'd see this. Right now, the IHR is an advisory document. The proposed amendments, though, would elevate it to a legal document, meaning that the organization will hold just as much power, if not more, compared with a governing body with legally binding jurisdiction and enforcement capabilities. I want to talk about this today with Frank Gaffney. He's executive chairman and founder of the Center for Security Policy, which you can find online at the Center for Security Policy. .org, and they actually put together a coalition to oppose this move by the World Health Organization, and you can find them at this web address. So check it out. If you want to learn more about this, I think it's important to read up, be aware of what's now happening, because it's not really being reported anywhere else. Go to sovereigntycoalition.org. That's sovereigntycoalition.org. Hey, Frank, thank you for your time. Delight to have you here.
Drew, thank you, and most especially thank you for calling attention to this really important problem, and we need your audience's help big time.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're there. I'm glad this coalition is there to say, hey, hold on, let's pump the brakes for a minute. You say that the WHO is under the influence of the Chinese Communist Party. You got to expand on that. I don't know a whole lot about that. How are they influencing that? What kind of evidence do you have? So maybe you know, share that chapter of the story with us.
Sure. Well, the evidence starts with they selected the guy who runs the World Health Organization, an Ethiopian communist by the name of Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus. And as is true, frankly, of almost all of the world organizations, if you can call them that, the UN and its various subsidiaries, now have people who've been selected by the Chinese Communist Party or are, in fact, Chinese communists themselves who run them. And this is just part of the larger saga, and we could spend more time than we have at the moment just reading people in on the unrestricted warfare that the Chinese Communist Party is waging against us. In fact, I've just published a new book called The Indictment, which talks about that unrestricted warfare and the war crimes that have resulted against us as a result. But to your question, the Chinese Communist Party is more or less calling the shots. And again, don't take my word for it. What Tedros Ghebreyesus did in the course of the COVID pandemic, first of all, was to parrot the lies the Chinese communists were telling us about the origins, about the nature, and about the best way to respond to this virus. Specifically, with respect to the latter, they promulgated what they called the China model. What was the China model? The China model was masks, quarantines, lockdowns, mandatory use of inadequately tested vaccines, and digital vaccine passports to assure compliance with whatever mandates would buy. All of that was right out of the Chinese playbook, and it was promoted by this group, which at the time, as you rightly say, under the international health regulations, had advisory power, namely the World Health Organization. But the trouble is that the way it worked out was more or less we all wound up doing what the World Health Organization told us to do. And that has emboldened the Chinese communists. Yes, it has emboldened the World Health Organization. Yes, it has emboldened the World Economic Forum, the globalists there at Davos. Yes, it's emboldened Bill Gates, right, who pays a considerable amount of the underwriting of this organization per year, and also Big Pharma, by the way. Yeah. So you had all of those folks and the Biden administration now saying, wait a minute, why don't we just give the World Health Organization compulsory power to tell us what is not just a pandemic, by the way, Drew, but a public health emergency of international concern, as they call it. And then to also give them the authority to tell us what we have to do in response to it. This would be crushing for our sovereignty. And by the way, not just at the national level, but at the personal level. And an awful lot of us didn't get the medical care that we thought we needed and are entitled to, really. Right. In the last pandemic, imagine if the World Health Organization is able to tell your doctor, sorry, you have to treat patients in such and such a way. You cannot give them such and such a therapy. You must, you know, make them lock down or whatever else, without anybody accountable to us, not our government, not our, you know, legislators, nobody. This is, I think, clearly unacceptable, which is why we started this sovereignty coalition. And people can find out more about it, as you very kindly said, at sovereigntycoalition.org. There's a declaration there we'd love to have them sign and get in front of their members of Congress urgently.
I think we're going to be less free if we allow this to go forward. Just the thought of their ability to censor. I mean, that's another thing that just struck me. We know what happened during the pandemic with Facebook and Twitter and a lot of the other social media, the big tech corporations, in terms of what they wanted you to see and what they didn't. And as I said, if people had more information, they could have made an informed decision as to whether or not they wanted, let's say, to get vaccinated or not get vaccinated. But censorship can influence. It can influence elections. If they have the ability to decide, you know, what can go forward and what can't, this other document calling for respect for the dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of a person, replacing them with terms like equity and inclusivity. What's the future look like? I mean, how far-reaching is this, and what will it mean for freedom here in America, and how will this be ultimately meted out if you choose not to comply?
It's actually not hard to figure it out. If I mentioned that one of the things that was in that China model was those vaccine passports or digital medical cards or IDs. Well, one of the things that is now being promoted by this World Health Organization amendment process is creating universal identity cards, digital identity cards. And why I say you don't have to imagine any of this is if those are in fact in place, what this very easily translates into is another part of the China model, what they call the social credit system of this Chinese Communist Party. And what does that translate into? As you know, Drew, it translates into a digital gulag.
Yeah.
Because especially once the central bank digital currencies are added into the mix, which is hurtling down the tracks at us, the government or whoever is running things, maybe it's the supranational government of the World Health Organization, is able to say, oh, you know, you're not complying adequately with our edicts. You just lost your bank account, or you can't spend your money in such and such a way on such and such a thing. And by the way, we're monitoring all of your social media traffic, all of your personal health data, yes, of course, but also, you know, where you are, what you're doing, what you're thinking. And again, this sounds dystopian. It sounds Orwellian, but it's actually what's in place in communist China right now and what they are feverishly trying to export elsewhere around the world, including here.
It's such a frightening thought. It gives me such pause to see what's happening in China.
It should.
Export it to other countries, including our own. If you want to join me, my guest today is Frank Gaffney, and you can dial in 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149, and join the conversation. You mentioned Bill Gates, and I'm curious, what kind of influence does Gates have, if any, over the organization?
Well, I think it's approximately $700 million worth of influence every year.
Wow.
And that's a lot of influence. Basically what we've learned about Bill Gates in the course of the pandemic and more generally is this guy is a sociophobe.
Yeah,
I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
He's bent on making money at every turn, and he really doesn't care what a cost is inflicted on everybody else. If it's famine, he's good with that because he thinks there's too many people and we ought to get rid of a sizable percentage of the population. If it's everybody has to take a vaccination for such and such a purpose or disease, as long as he, you know, owns the patents or is a big investor in it, that's okay, even if it kills people, as we've seen with some of these vaccines for COVID, so-called vaccines. He is, in short, I think, a guy you don't want anywhere near controlling anything.
Yeah.
And yet he is controlling a lot, including exercising a lot of influence on this this organization. One of our colleagues, by the way, in the Sovereignty Coalition is a guy who was formerly a scientist and official of the World Health Organization, Dr. David Bell. Mm. And he's absolutely clear about the undue and dangerous influence that not only Bill Gates, but also Big Pharma, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, yeah. which wants vaccinations to be forced on people and wants to sell them and doesn't want to be bothered with having to make sure they won't harm the people. Yeah. I mean, that kind of influence is, again, something you want nowhere near agencies like this that can dictate policy.
Well, Frank, stay with me if you could for a minute or two. We'll take a few calls. Sure. If you've got concerns, you've got a question, a comment, you want to sound off, good time to do that. You can get in now at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We'll take a call or two from you on the other side. Grab a pen and paper, too. We'll tell you how you can say no to the digital gulag. We'll also see how close it's coming and what we can do to make a difference. All that straight ahead. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I'm not holding a small cup, Drew. I'm handing holding an extra large cup.
A bucket.
Every weekday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, about 10 minutes before the top of the hour, we will pray. The chaplet coming up. If you're just joining me, the Center for Security Policy, and you can check them out at centerforsecuritypolicy.org. I came across an article. It said, say no to the digital gulag. Great header, right? Like, what are they talking about? I thought, well, began reading. And they make this case. They say that the noose is tightening on freedom in America. A Team Biden has been stealthily working to give the World Health Organization sweeping powers to unilaterally declare here public health emergencies of international concern and dictate how we respond. He says the WHO is that global entity that insisted, you'll remember, on, you know, masking up and jabbing and getting the vaccines out and all the other things that went on during the COVID-19 pandemic. So to help enforce the edicts of the World Health Organization, the WHO wants to require universal digital ID cards. Are you ready for that? You know, just like those used in China, those with the CCP, with Communist China's totalitarian social credit system. You cannot travel in China if your social credit score is bad. If you make late payments, if you violate the law, if you have too much, perhaps, you know, you have too much alcohol in your cart. I mean, they have scores for everything over there. It's crazy, the oppression. You know, they'll know whether you jaywalk or not. They're one of the most surveilled countries on the planet. Imagine having this ID card and you choose not to get vaccinated. Well, you may not be able to leave the country. So the U.S. Senate recently agreed that such arrangements could be imposed on you, the American people, without its approval. And it may, and I underline the word may soon adopt legislation requiring you to get that digital ID before the World Health Organization does. So either way, as I pointed out, the Center for Security Policy is saying that we may be headed for a digital gulag unless we say no. I'm joined today by Frank Gaffney, and he's executive chairman and founder of the Center for Security Policy. You can check them out. Check out this website, though, sovereigntycoalition.org. That's really where you want to go, sovereigntycoalition.org. Frank, it's, I don't know, it sounds dystopian. Sounds like that would never happen, not here in the home of the free and the brave, not here in the United States of America, and not here, right? But, you know, we see this slippery slope, you know, this creep coming into the country, and people are willing to give up personal freedom sometimes for greater security, and I'm always concerned about that. Let's talk a little bit about Senator Ron Johnson, who denounced this UN interference. What happened to him? Share with everyone what just happened.
Yeah, this is a really creepy piece of this whole thing. You know, again, people listening to us talk might say, well, the U.S. government isn't going to let this kind of stuff happen. The U.S. government under Joe Biden is actually pushing this agenda forward. is the truth of the matter. And look no further than the amendment that Ron Johnson, senator from Wisconsin, terrific guy, offered on the Senate floor about 2 weeks ago, which basically said, look, these agreements, and there's one, as you said earlier, related to international health regulations that exist now and would be modified. And there's another one that's being called, in every place except Washington, a pandemic treaty.
Wow.
Either one of them is going to be a problem, and both of them will be especially a problem. Ron Johnson said, well, you know, these could be problematic. Let's just agree as a Senate that whatever comes out of this process will have to be treated as a treaty, given the formal consideration, the advice and consent process stipulated in our Constitution, as what? A quality control device. And the bar, the founders were very wise about this, Drew. They said, because you can change everything in our country by making some foreign agreement, witness what they're talking about doing with the WHO, we want a two-thirds majority of the Senate to have to approve a treaty. So guess what? Under the Obama administration, the Clinton administration, the Biden administration, they don't want any part of bringing treaties to the Senate. And by a 49-47 vote, Democrats in the Senate blocked Ron Johnson's amendment. So as things stand now, the Senate will not consider, will not interpose objections, will not preclude this bad stuff from happening to us, which, again, the Biden administration is all about bringing the past.
Wow, unbelievable. So what can we do? I mean, how do we push back against this? The other thing I'm curious about, too, before we even get to what we personally can do, what's the enforcement mechanism from this? My understanding always was that such a change to a document needs the approval of the Senate. I don't know whether that falls under their jurisdiction in approving or denying treaties, but let's say it becomes reality. We'll go down this path. How does it get enforced? Would the World Health Organization enforce it? If you know, how does the law get? What's the enforcement arm?
It's a good question. I think if you look back on what happened in the pandemic, COVID pandemic, there was a lot of self-enforcement.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I actually had my personal physician tell me that I had to get the jab because the World Health Organization said so. Well, I didn't have that authority, and I didn't, but, you know, that wasn't because they didn't think they could insist on it. But the treaty, particularly, as I understand it, has in its current form some undertaking that would have the World Trade Organization be an enforcement mechanism, that it could put sanctions into place on countries if they don't conform. But I think in this case, even without that mechanism, if you've got the government of the United States itself submitting arrangements, crushing our sovereignty in the process, but nonetheless voluntarily submitting, then it becomes the enforcement mechanism, presumably. Let me give you a specific example, and I mentioned this very quickly a moment ago.
Okay.
Public health emergencies of international concern are not necessarily pandemics, Drew. They could be things like, gun violence. And you have Tedros Ghebreyesus simply arbitrarily saying this gun violence thing happening in Chicago or Nashville or someplace else in the United States in general is so bad that we have to interpose to have those. Well, gun control is obviously not working. It's happening in places where there's a lot of gun control. We're going to have those guns confiscated. Well, who would do that? Well, presumably, if the government of the United States, which would love to confiscate your guns under the Biden administration, let's be clear, gets an international order to do it, I venture to guess they would try to. Now, what the consequences of that would be is anybody's guess. But I think there's a lot of moving parts here. And the only answer, you ask, what do we do about it? The only answer we've been able to come up with that protects our sovereignty, both national sovereignty, personal sovereignty, is to get the United States out of the World Health Organization before anybody has the kind of power that we're talking about being ceded to the organization, and however they enforce it, doing so at the expense of, again, our freedoms.
Well, Frank, thank you for your campaign and for all that you're doing. I want to get people plugged in. I have about a minute left for you. People will, you know, want more information, or they want to read up or share this with somebody else. What's the best way to connect?
Well, you can do all of that, but you can do one other thing as well at sovereigntycoalition.org. There is on the homepage an American Sovereignty Declaration. I encourage every one of your listeners to take a look at it. I think you'll find it very much aligned with your thinking. If it is, please sign it. And then take the Align At step that enables you, with a basic click of a mouse, to contact your elected representatives and tell them you want them to get us out of the World Health Organization.
Well, Frank, I appreciate it. Again, the website, very easy to get to, sovereigntycoalition.org. My gratitude to Frank Gaffney, who is executive chairman and founder of the Center for Security Policy. And look, I'm putting this before you. I don't know if you've heard it any other place than right here. But share the information. Share the podcast with somebody else. You might say, oh, I got to share this with my spouse or my sibling or whoever it might be. When we sign off today, it takes Maggie maybe about an hour, but she'll get the broadcast up. It's a great way to turn others on to relevant radio, but at the same time to get them plugged into this type of information. Of course, you can find all that info at sovereigntycoalition.org. It's top of the hour. We're going to take a short break. On the other side, we'll pause. It's day six of that novena of chaplets. We'll pray the Divine Mercy novena when I return.